Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
Coming up...
Like, if it weren't for Viv doing the RuPaul's Drag Race ambassadorship all those years ago, showing Ru that drag in the UK was not to be snubbed and not to be laughed at, we were worthy of having our own Drag Race. Like, we probably wouldn't have Drag Race UK without Viv. Let's call a spade a spade. So I think what she did was absolutely amazing, and I feel so lucky to have known and loved her.
Welcome to the show this week, the very lovely Kitty Scott-Claus.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You're on because there's some exciting stuff going on with you at the moment. We know you're drag royalty and all-round chaos. You're in Global All-Stars now, aren't you? What was it like walking back into the room surrounded by drag royalty from all around the world?
Oh my God, it was just incredible. It felt like such an honour as well. I remember like when the call came through to do Global, I was like, this is so huge. Like the more you deep it, the more it's like, oh my God, this is actually insane. Like being the one person to represent UK drag, I mean, what an honour, you know?
It's a lot of pressure though, isn't it? A lot riding on that.
Oh my God, so much. But I feel like you can't think of it like that. I think the thing is, I think for me, Drag Race was so much fun doing it the first time. And so I tried to replicate that the second time. I was like, well, I did well the first time by just being in the moment and having fun and enjoying every challenge. And so that's what I want to do the second time round, you know, like I just want to enjoy it and take it for what it is, because it is such a unique and special experience.
10 out of 12 of you were finalists already. Did that make it feel a bit more intense? Were you kind of like, oh my God, I can't make any mistakes here?
Oh my God, totally. And the thing is as well, like knowing that like 10 out of the 12 of us were all finalists, everyone, like the stakes were so high, you know? And it's like, and the other two that weren't finalists, it was Alyssa Edwards, like, oh my God, are you joking? And Tessa Testicle from Drag Race Germany, who's an icon in her own right. But it's like, oh my God, this is like, the cast was so stacked. Everyone was so talented. Everyone was so lovely, which like also like, I know it doesn't like, but you should be, but like, it's just like, oh my God, everyone here is so, so nice. And so I remember like walking in day one thinking like, oh my God, this is going to be cutthroat.
Is that not always the case?
Not with Drag Race UK.
No, but really, I mean, like generally, I mean, that's not your only experience, is it, Drag Race UK? Like generally in your line of work, sometimes you walk in and it's like, oh, these aren't on my side. Or is it generally a kind of like quite supportive world?
Do you know what? I think on the whole, it is a supportive world. Everyone wants you to do your best. And like, there's nothing I love more than going backstage at a show and like kikiing with the girls before, having a laugh,
nice,
like ripping into each other. I think that's what British drag is just, yeah, literally like sitting in the dressing room before, not even before the show, after the show's finished, and you're all sat there in drag and you're just ripping into each other for hours on end. It's like, oh my God, it's the funniest in the world. Like, so jokes. It's like, there should be like, this is what people should pay to come and see.
That is not a bad idea though, is it? Like, I mean, I'm sure there's something.
I'm gonna
get
onto World of Wonder. I'm gonna be like, guys, you've got the Drag Race Vegas Untucked. How about you come follow Kitty and I'll give you my own Untucked.
You won Snatch Game Princess Diana. Where did that come from? I know, but it's difficult to explain to someone who might not understand quite how sacred the memory of Princess Diana is. But also like, how ripe that is for, gentle fun with it. If you know
exactly.
What I mean.
Exactly. Do you know what? I think that's the thing. Like, originally, when you auditioned for Drag Race in the first place, we had to do two Snatch Games,
yeah,
for our videotape and to audition to get onto the show. And I auditioned with Gemma Collins, who I ended up doing on season 3 of Drag Race UK. and Princess Diana. And I think it was Princess Diana that got me on the show. They were like, that is so funny. That is hilarious. That's what's got you cast. You're not allowed to bring it. You cannot bring it to the studio. It's too to the bone, especially with it being like BBC and everything.
God,
it's like,
yeah.
We can't, like, there's no way. So when Global came around, I was like, I'm going to do Diana.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I have to. I feel like it's like one of those things where it's like the universe is like, oh my God, it's a sign. And the thing is, like, the whole impersonation of our Di was done with such love and like it admiration is. And I'm such a huge fan of her, and I think
God love her.
The fact that it's nearly 30 years on since her passing, and the fact that she is still such a present figure in the lives of not just Brits, I think especially for the queer community, looking at what she did.
Yeah, she was like, lovely actually, like that one. She
went out there and did that with the AIDS patients, yeah. And went and touched them and hugged them and like showed that like humility when
that was groundbreaking at the time as well, wasn't it? Such a message for like someone so loved to like make physical contact with someone who was like, this person has
100%.
AIDS. It's a game changer.
And so I think that's why like people and especially the queer community hold her in such a high regard. And so when I did her on Snatch Game, I was like, I just have to do her with so much love.
Yeah.
I know we're going to be ripping into her, but I love her so much.
I think she'd
so
have liked like... that though. I think like the Diana
too.
That we see, not the curated sort of like godly image, but like Diana seemed to have like from memory, I was kind of a teenager at the time, had a sense of fun. And also what a smart move on your part to bring one of Britain's most recognised kind of, not matriarchal, but you know, kind of glamorous figures to the global stage, because everyone knows who she is, don't they? Like,
totally.
You couldn't bring the GC to the global audience, because I think some of them would be like,
who
the fuck's
that? I struggled with. Yeah, I was actually like, all my references are so British and so like, I'm at the moment, I'm like, when I go back and next time, I want to do Charlotte Tilbury. And it's like, well, that wouldn't work on Global All Stars, because unless you're a Brit and like, especially like in with like Hun culture and Charlotte Tilbury's like, darlings and her lisp and how she knows everyone and just like my magic cream darlings and her singing and her lisp and she's so funny. I think like that would be hilarious. It's like that wouldn't work on a global stage.
Yeah.
I mean, don't tell Charlotte Tilbury that. She'd be like, darlings, it would work. Everyone knows me. I know Elton. but like I feel like it had to be someone on that level, you know, that it would be like so recognizable, so like instantly, you know, like that person who is also British, you know. That's what I found so difficult. I remember like you have to take three options for Snatch Game, and I only took two for Global. I took Diana, who I had my heart set on doing, and I was like, well, I'm doing her no matter what. Like, Rue can try and talk me out of playing Di and I'll still do her. And I took Susan Boyle as a backup, thinking like, oh, that's another, but I didn't really have any idea what to do for Susan Boyle, whereas like Diana, I knew exactly what to do.
You ran the London Marathon. Two things I want to pick up on there. We'll come to where you're up to with your fitness journey, which is incredible, because I'm someone who just falls on and off that fitness wagon all the time. You ran it in memory of your friend, the Vivian. What did she mean to you? And do you think drag queens at the moment are under more pressure than ever, the pressure they're under, like emotionally in terms of the world around them?
I think the thing is, Viv is such an icon.
Yeah.
And I think she's left such a legacy behind her. And I think she's such an icon for queens present and like in the future are going to look up to the Vivian. She's left such a lasting legacy behind her, which is amazing. And to get to call her a friend was just amazing. And it feels like such an honor. And I think like what she did was incredible. She was so groundbreaking in so many ways. Like, if it weren't for Viv doing the RuPaul's Drag Race ambassadorship all those years ago, showing Ru that drag in the UK was not to be snubbed and not to be laughed at, we were worthy of having our own drag race. Like, we probably wouldn't have Drag Race UK without Viv. Let's call a spade a spade. So I think what she did was absolutely amazing, and I feel so lucky to have known and loved her. And yeah, I think definitely there is a pressure to perform a certain way. I think like it reiterates the like how important pride is to me and how important it is to use our voices. Like, we've been given this amazing platform by the BBC, by World of Wonder, and put on this stage, which is incredible. And for me, I think when I first got on Drag Race, I was like, oh my God, this is huge. And like, not really thinking about like the level of like where this is like propelling you and taking mm-hmm. you. But I think like being a couple of years into this now, for how long have I been doing this? For like since like Drag Race, like 4 years. I think like it really shows like you need to use your voice. And as much as like, I remember thinking like, when anything political would happen, I'd be like, I'm not a political figure. I don't want to speak on it. And it's like, no, the world needs to hear my voice. Mm-hmm. I've been put on this platform for a reason. And so I'm going to use my voice and I'm going to scream and shout and show my support for the trans community. Because I think what is going on in the world right now is, sorry, I feel like I'm going off on my TED talk.
No, not at all. No, I
think it's insane. And I think like, it's just absolutely wild that, I feel like we were making such good progress and this just feels like a massive, massive backstep. Just
recently, well, the last 10 years.
Heartbreaking. Yeah, totally, totally. And so I just feel like, oh my God, but now more than ever, we need to use our voices and show our support for our trans and non-binary siblings.
Before we lost to Vivian the year before, do you remember when she was punched in the face in the McDonald's on Edge Lane in Liverpool? Yes. So for me, as someone who is from Liverpool and, you know, it was involved in that scene for a long time, that was a real moment where I thought, we really are under attack here. This is the most well-known queer figure in the area. Man walks up and just goes, says whatever the fuck the guy said. And then punches her full on in the face. And then we are where we are now. Do like acts of violence like that and the way sort of politicians are singling out drag performers, do they leave you sometimes frightened in public, or are you just refusing to sort of submit to that?
I feel like we can't be frightened. I feel like if you're going to be frightened, you're going to, and the thing, like Viv would say this as well, like Viv, after the attack, which was horrific, Viv wasn't hiding away. She was out there. She was fighting the fight, showing she wasn't afraid. She took like legal action. She won the legal action, didn't she against the guy. Like, fucking good on her. Do you know what? But I think, no, like, you can't shy away. You have to use your voice. You have to be out loud and proud and show we aren't going anywhere. And I think the thing is, it's all diversion tactics, isn't it? I mean, like, there's a statistic and it's like less than 1 in every 1,000 people are trans. And the fact that the government are like marginalizing this such a small percentage of the community and villainizing it, I think is absolutely wild. And it's like, what are you diverting from? Like, why are you trying to make people concerned about what toilets people are going to? What are you hiding from us?
So drag queens have that reputation of, and I would say someone that has worked with drag queens and extensively over the last few years, and some from Drag Race as well, have that reputation of being chaotic, showing up late sometimes hungover, and we love that generalization. Is it true? Is it just part of the magic, or is that an unfair sort of generalization?
Do you know what? I think it's fair to say every drag queen has been there, done that. Yeah. And I feel like
it's not aimed at you, by the way.
No, I know.
It's aimed at the thing is, a number of people.
Just the general drag queen population. I feel like if you book a drag queen, you're going to be like, okay,
where
we'll
is she?
The call time is 12 o'clock. We'll tell the drag queen it's 11 o'clock and they'll still be late. You know, I did a booking last week and I remember they were like, okay, your call time is 10:30. And I arrived at like 10:20 and they were like, you're earlier. I was like, yeah. And they were like, oh God, we thought you were going to be late. I think it's funny because it's like people book a drag queen expect you to be late, and it's like I don't know, I feel like the thing is, from where I grew up in the world of theatre,
yes,
if you were on time you were late, if you were early you were on time,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
so
yes.
And I've had that drilled into me, and so like, oh my God, there's nothing worse than being late. And I think like it's so rude and disrespectful. And I remember like growing up, like if I was late for drama school we would get suspended for that day. So like I think that's why I'm so like, no, it must be on time,
must be
you know, like courteous to other people's time. And even though you're coming to do a job, like everyone else around you is doing a job as well, so it's like, you know, can't be the weak link in a chain, you know, you don't want to be that. So but yeah, and like the whole like turning up hungover thing, I mean, we've all been there, done
we
that
have,
I don't
I
drink
have.
Anymore I've been alcohol free for nearly 18 months now, since like February last year. So it's going on 18 months. And so I think like, that's another thing that I'm like, oh my God, like I can turn up to work and I don't feel like, oh God, I need to have a drink to get through this hair of the dog. You know, it's like, oh my God, what a game changer. For me personally, other people, go for your life.
So you talked about your background there, obviously, theatre school, all that kind of stuff. That must have had loads of influence on your work.
Oh my God, so much, so much.
And your ethos as well.
Definitely, definitely. I trained in musical theatre and I remember being at drama school and they would ask like, what part do you want to play on the West End right now? And I would always say like, I want to be Glinda in Wicked. I want to be Elle Woods in Legally Blonde. Like my parts in my head that I wanted to play, they were like, well, that's not going to happen because you are a boy. And I was like, yeah, but I'll make it happen. I'll do it in drag or something. You know, I had this whole thing where I was like, I'm going to be the first now Glinda. And I mean, it still could happen. It hasn't happened so far. But I think like, just like, so doing the musical theatre route and then realising like, oh my God, like being shown the world of drag. And like the way I fell into drag, my best friend was a drag queen. And they were doing a Girls Aloud tribute night at Her Upstairs, which is no longer with us, in Camden, which was a fab queer bar, which, I mean, all the queer bars are closing, but that's another, another story. And so I literally fell into it. They were like, can you be our Kimberly Walsh? And I was like, yeah, sure, I see what you do. And I could do that. It looks fun. And yeah, why not? So started doing it there. And I was actually like, oh my God, it was like, my eyes opened up to like, oh my God, this is how I'm gonna get like go and do like I can be Glinda in Wicked and yeah. I can be Sandy in Grease and I can do all these parts that I wanted to play, but drama school was like, no, you can't do that. So it definitely shaped me as a person. I think like starting out in drag, a lot of my numbers were all like musical theatre. It was all like singing the songs I wasn't allowed to sing at college. You know, it felt like, oh my God, rebellious. But I don't know. That's why I fell in love with drag so much, that it was that freedom of expression and it you weren't being told like, no, this is your casting, you can't do this.
I love that. Yeah. So it's opened up, you're able to do so much more because you can occupy so much more space creatively, can't you?
Totally. Totally. And now what's funny is like, I'm X amount of years into my drag career. I think it's 8 years this year that I've been doing drag. And now I come around and I do musical theatre, but I'm doing the parts that I wanted to play before. Like we did Peter Pan this Christmas just gone as a panto and I was Wendy. It's like, oh my God, this is so jokes. Like I was Sleeping Beauty in Sleeping Beauty. I was Frenchie in Grease 2, you know, Cool Rider. And it's like, oh my God, I'm getting to play all these parts that I'm like, never in a million years would I believe like, I'm going to play these parts on the West End. That is absolutely mad to me.
So you talked about the fact that you've been alcohol-free for 18 months.
Yes.
What led to that? How are you finding it? I don't think I could do it.
Do you know what? I didn't think I could do it either. And honestly, it was... I don't want to say, like, to sound like... make it sound like it's nothing, but it was actually, like, the easiest thing in the world for me, like, giving up alcohol. I really thought I'd struggle with it. I really thought, like, especially being a drag performer, and I mean your job is essentially there to encourage people to buy drinks.
Yeah.
You like, you know. So I thought, how am I gonna do my job and not drink? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand the correlation there. I stopped basically because I was on my fitness journey and my health journey and I was losing all this weight, and then I sort of like plateaued. My weight had plateaued and it wasn't budging, and so my fab PT Monty was like, just do a food diary for a week and we'll see what happens. And that week I went to a house party and I was drinking so much. I was using Prosecco as a mixer, like, oh my God, horrific. I think about it now and I'm like, oh my God, how did I do that? And then I would, like, the thing is, I was one of those people, like, I wouldn't drink to have, like, I could never just have one glass of wine. I would drink like 10 bottles, I was a big drinker. And so I think cutting that out, I wouldn't then go home and order McDonald's at 3 a.m. Thinking like, I don't want to be hungover tomorrow morning, you know. And so I stopped for a week and I found it really easy to stop. And I was like, oh my God. And then I noticed, like, okay, my face isn't puffy anymore because it's not swollen from like all the alcohol and everything, you know. And so it was like all these things started to like outweigh, like, well, I'd rather look nice in pictures and I would rather continue like losing weight and like then have a boozy night out. And I think like doing that first sober night out for me, that was tough to just like, but also it was so like affirming to see that I could do it and it was possible. And also I think like it's 2025, no one gives a shit anymore. No one, like, everyone's, I think the thing is, the world, everyone's so wrapped up in their own world that if you're on a night out and you're having a bottle of water, no one's really paying.
Well, they don't give a shit, do they? Like,
two minds, no.
I feel like years ago they were like, oh, not drinking, that, oh, it must be really boring. But now it's like, oh, you're not drinking and that's kind of your business. So it sounds to me like you drunk a lot. Did you think your drinking was problematic, or was it literally you were just like, right, there's a shit ton of, for me, I always think there's a shit ton of calories in alcohol. So yeah. I just don't want the calories.
I think, I don't ever think I had a problem. I think like my line of work, obviously, encourage drinking.
Of course it does. Yeah, like, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
The thing is, like, you're working in nightlife, you turn up to a venue and someone like cracked open a bottle of Prosecco for you, you're going to be like, oh my God, this is the dream. Yeah. And I think as well, like, after coming off a show like Drag Race, where you are going around and you are being celebrated and, you know, like, you want to have a good time and like experience all of it. And so I feel like I'm very grateful that I did all of that. And I feel like I embraced it so much. But to do all that and like come out the other side of it and see, like, oh my God, like, that's the thing as well, like, I never realized like the calories in alcohol,
unreal.
And for me, loads. I'm like, if I'm in a calorie deficit, I would rather eat my calories than drink them and not think about it, you know.
100% I've totally struggled to do what you've done. I think fair play to you, like, that's such a tough thing to do, to like cut out the alcohol. Especially when you work in an entertainment-y job around people that are going, have a drink. It really takes something. So, I mean, I guess for you, once you've eliminated the alcohol, the rest of it is probably a lot easier, isn't it, on your journey? I know you're not going down the Ozempic route or anything. You were out there doing this before that probably came through as much as it has done in the last 6 months.
I know, and you know what? It's the worst time to lose bloody weight in the world, because no matter what you do or what you say, everyone's like, oh, it's just Ozempic. And you're like, no, it's, I honestly,
you've been,
I wish,
doing this longer than that's been a thing, just,
I know,
about.
I know. And I think the thing is, I sort of kept like my weight loss journey, I was posting about it, but not really like that much, mm-hmm. until like last summer, until I had like a real like, because also I was wearing, like, in drag, I don't think you could really notice. I mean, you could probably tell if you saw me in person, but in pictures, I was wearing all the same clothes that I was wearing before.
Did you just look the same?
Because they would still fit. And I feel like the drag sort of made me look the same. And it wasn't until I did, like, a shoot showing, like, how far I'd come, like, a before and after, mm-hmm. that people were like, oh, my God, this is so quick. And it's like, well, it's not. And also, I've been in the gym every single day.
Every day.
Like, I work out every day. I'm always doing something. And then I'm training for the marathon.
Yeah.
And I swim every day. I love swimming. So it's like, I'm doing all this, but people use the first to be like, oh, it's just Ozempic though. It's, I feel like for people, it's a get out of jail free card. They're like, well, Kitty Scott-Wills is on Ozempic because she has a blue tick. And it's like, no, I'm actually working out all the time. Yeah. And I really enjoy it. And I think it's so, like, not just like physically, but mentally, it's so like rewarding.
Yeah, totally. I think that the main reason when I'm exercising properly, which I think I've done relatively successfully over the last 10 years, the main reason I do it is because it keeps me emotionally balanced.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that that's an often overlooked thing. If Ozempic had been out a couple of years longer than it has done, and it was on the table in front of you before you'd started this journey, would you be interested in going down that route, or would you have gone, no, I'm going to do this myself? Because I don't think there's any shame either way myself.
No. The thing is, like, this is the thing. I feel like if I had taken Ozempic, I would, in the words of Lisa Rinna, I would own it. I would say to people, I've done it. I've been using that. But the fact that I haven't, and that's why I'm so like, well, I'm not, and I'm really proud of the fact that I've done this myself. Do you know, it came to a point, it was that point when my weight sort of plateaued, and I remember everyone started saying like, oh, there's this new drug coming out and it stops your appetite and whatever. And I was with my PT and I was like, do you think I should do this? And he was like, let's just cut the alcohol for a week and see where we go with that. And if nothing happens, we can always consider going down this like Ozempic route. And so it was definitely something I considered, but I think the fact that like my weight all of a sudden after we cut out the booze came off so much that it was like, oh, I don't need it. And also I, like, my PT said to me, he was like, I think it'd be better for you mentally if you do this by yourself. It's going to be harder and it's going to be tougher, but I think, like, longevity and, like, for your own headspace to know, like, I've done this by myself. Because I've got so many friends that have done Ozempic and Mounjaro and Wegovy. Is that the other one?
I only know Mounjaro and Ozempic. But I'll write that other one down just in case I need to get a prescription for it.
I've got so many friends that have done them and then they look great. They love it. Fabulous times, come off it and they put all the weight back on straight away, and it's like,
because the root cause is still not kind of fixed, is it? You've got into it. That's the routine. I would honestly, if I could only just form my routine, and I was training loads until 2 months ago till I moved house, and then my routine is just fucked, and I cannot summon the arseness. And fair play to you for summoning the arseness, because it really takes some.
But you know what? Like, doing this whole fitness journey, I was never a morning person in my life. I was always like, oh my God, I need to sleep in until like 10 o'clock or whatever. And now every morning I'm like, I wake up at like 10 to 7 and it's like, well, I'm going to go to the gym first thing, because I know I like to do my workout first thing.
In the morning.
Before I start my day. So, and it's like, oh my God, like if you would have told me this like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I'd be like, what? Like, who's that? Like, that's not me at all, you know?
Has it, and I think I know what the answer to this is, because I know what we're all like. How has it changed the way people treat you on the apps and in dating?
Oh my God, totally. 100%. And I think, like, fair, because also, like, I remember, like, when I first started noticing it, I said to my friend, I was like, what gives me the ick is, like, boys that I would fancy before and wouldn't give me the time of day before, all of a sudden are paying me attention. And I'm like, it gives me the ick that it's like, ew, like, what's, like, if you didn't like me then, you don't deserve me now. Yes. I was very much that mentality. And then I remember my friend said, yeah, but also, like, if you think, like, would you have been attracted to, not to be fatphobic or anything, but, like, would you have been attracted to that before or now? You know, it's like, and it's like, okay, like, fair. I mean, personally, I like a bigger person. I like a big rugby player guy, you know? So for me, like, size doesn't matter. I think, like, but I think, like, yeah, to answer your question, I have noticed, like, a change in people. It's not even just on the apps. It's like, in real life, you notice such a change in people, and like it's actually wild to see. Like, and I hate to like call it like fat phobia and like go down that route. What I noticed, like what I found funny, was when Global All Stars was airing, it was because that was right at the beginning of my weight loss journey, and I remember going away and filming All Stars and thinking like, at that time, I was like, oh, I've lost 3 stone. I feel amazing in myself. And like, I was so proud of how I looked. And like, then coming off the other side of that, losing a load more weight and then looking completely different the time the show was airing to like what I looked like when we filmed it. I remember having to remind myself, I felt so good then. And I was so proud of where I was at. And even though people online were like, fat, whatever, like, all these fatphobic comments. I also felt like I couldn't comment on like fatphobia because I was like, well, I know I've lost a load of weight and I feel like it looks dodgy if I'm then coming in saying like X, Y, Z, you're being fatphobic. Yeah. And then it's like, well, you've gone and lost a load of weight. So are you fatphobic, you know?
So did you just sit it out and just think, I'm just going to not respond to the comments? Because people are just going to say stuff anyway, aren't they? They are, you know what everyone's like. They're horrible.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Do you think queer culture's got a body image problem then?
I do think so. It's a funny one, but I do think, like, as toxic as it is, it's like, it is that whole, and I think, like, it's not just the queer community. I think it's like the fact that, like, for like my generation, like growing up with like television from like the 2000s and the late 90s, and like having like being so force-fed like thin is in, and like be thin holds so much value. I think that is so toxic, and I think that more than anything has left such a negative impact on so many people, not just queer people, you know. But I do think, like, it is wild that it's like it's 2025 and we've still all got this trauma where it's like, oh my God, like being thin and being like typically aesthetically pleasing holds so much
weight. And I feel like it's moving more in that direction, because the main thing in the world at the moment, which is funny because we're doing an audio only thing right now, but the main thing that people judge everything by is the visual aesthetics, isn't it?
Yeah,
because of Instagram.
100%.
Everyone just judges things by, oh, if it looks a certain way, then it is a certain way, and they don't delve any deeper. And we haven't, it's not our fault, is it? We're just responding to the way the world is around us, I think.
Totally.
So we talked about Ozempic there. You've done it the hard way. What your take on Ozempic generally? Do you think it's frustrating? Do you think it's sad? Or do you think it's a good thing?
I think it's good. I think, like, if it works for you, it works for you. And I think, like, it's no one's place to say, like, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, oh my God, it's your life. Live your life. Do what makes you happy. What annoys me is I would get comments from people being like, you are the reason me and my family can't have our Ozempic, because there's people like you out there who are going out and taking it because you've got a following and we can't have our prescription anymore. It's like, okay, number one, you've just completely assumed that I like, and
yeah.
The thing, I think people are so like, there's
have
no,
you had
like,
that as a message?
Oh my God, so many
times.
Oh my
God.
And it's the amount of times I'm literally, and I don't reply because I'm like, no, because I'm like, what are you going to reply to that? And also, I know that I'm not on Ozempic, and so I've not taken it from these people. But the thing is, I feel like I've learned, no matter what you say or do, people have a perception of you. And no matter what you say, like, even if you're saying like, well, no, that's not true, that doesn't fit in with their narrative that they've come up for you. And so it's like, they're not going to, you will never win.
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
no point stressing yourself out over a random stranger's comments. It's like, let them think that. Like, oh, they'll cry themselves to sleep. Bye.
I'm going to ask you just a couple of things about, like, just what's going on in the world at the moment. Do you think it's harder to be funny now? Especially in your line of work, because your humour is what you're about. And drag humour is edgy by expectation. So...
yeah, I do. I think like the way the world is, and I think it's the let's call a spade, the world is a scary place right now. I think like as a drag queen, you want to be funny and you want to be, it is like, I feel like you're always towing the line where it's like, oh, go on. Like, can you say this? Can you not? And it's like, oh.
And that's the fun, isn't it? A lot of the time.
Totally. Yeah. Like, that's what I find so funny, that it is like towing the line of being like, oh my God, that one was a killer, or you just killed it. Like, that was, and not in a good way, hon, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I think like there is definitely a pressure to be like, especially like being put on a platform that Drag Race gives you, it is, you always want to be seen as doing your best. And but also at the same time, it's such a double-edged sword, because as much as you want to be seen as perfect, you also want to be seen as being like really funny. Yeah, I want to be the funniest person in the room, I want to be the loudest person in the room, you know. And it's like towing the line.
Trump in the White House, like the
LOL,
the, I know, the impact,
the girls are fighting him and Elon Musk last week, and go,
oh my God, honestly, what do you think that means for queer people globally? Does it worry you about you? Then I think we should have just a little chat about Trump and Musk, because I think there's something in that.
Oh my God, I just think it's wild. But like, again, if you would have asked me like 5 years ago, like, do you think this would ever happen? It's like, no, not in a million years.
No.
And yet here we are. It's like, okay, how is this real? How is this real life? How are we here? Like, what? Insane. But also, like, as queer people, it is scary, and it really is like, oh my God, like, terrifying. And the fact that like Liverpool Pride being cancelled.
Oh yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
so, yeah.
I'm sorry, what? Uh-huh. Like, what the hell? What the hell is going on? Like, it's a scary time to be queer, but I think more than anything, it just shows like how important it is to be visible and be seen and be proud and not shy away from using your voice, you know. God, I sound like a housewife. I sound like a housewife, but she's like, I found my voice and I'm gonna use it. That's me.
What about Trump and Musk the other day? Because like, from if reports to be believed, Musk's just been in the White House being prescribed ketamine, microdosing this.
Honestly,
and that. I mean, what is going on? What's your take on it?
Insane. And these are like, well, Elon Musk isn't a world leader as much as he likes to think he is, but it's like, what? Like, how are these people held in such high regard. Like, I do not understand. I don't, and like, oh my God. And what freaks me out the most is that, like, it feels like whatever happens in America gets trickled down and watered down, and then it happens over yeah. here in the UK and in Australia in years to come. And it's like, oh my God. I thought we'd just, like, getting rid of Boris. I was like, hooray, see you never.
Yeah, I think he's coming back. I think the way things are going, he'll come back. I think what's going to happen is Reform UK are going to get in next, and that will be awful. They'll fuck it.
Yeah.
And then Boris will come in at that point. I think you heard it here first. Are you scared about Reform UK? Because you said you're worried about these things trickling into the UK. Does that scare you a bit because of their... You've heard the stuff that they say about queer people, about drag culture Absolutely. In general.
Yeah, it's insane. But also, I love that, like, again, I think it's scare tactics. It's like, avoid it. If they push this narrative on, like, queer people and trans people and drag queens, it's like, then you're avoiding taking questions from, like, serious matters. Like, you know, like, come on, like, trans people using the bathroom, that is not a serious issue. That does not need a Supreme Court hearing, you know? Like, what the hell? Also, when that whole thing came out about, like, was it, like, train inspectors have the right to strip search people. When has a train inspector ever had to strip search someone?
Yeah, the British Transport Police. Yeah, yeah.
And like, then, what the hell?
Who asked them to comment on it as well? They were like, oh, well, tell you what, we're going to treat trans women like cisgender men. And we're like, well, no one... Who asked the train police to comment on that? Fuck off.
Literally, when does that ever... If you've got a train ticket or not, right, take your pants off. Like, what? Can we not?
As if they were the first as well. They're going to want to hear what we've got to say about this. You're the British Transport Police, honestly. Right, you are doing Global All-Stars, obviously, at the moment.
You can watch that on WOW Presents Plus or on Paramount Plus in the US.
And
worldwide.
And worldwide. And what is next for you? What's coming up for you soon?
So up next, I'm reprising my role as Princess Diana.
Oh, good.
Diana mixtape, which is coming to here at Outen Air in London
nice.
This summer. And then we're going to the Lowry in Salford in August, which is going to be very, very exciting. It's five drag queens playing Princess Diana. It's me, Courtney Act, Davina DeCampo,
yes.
Priyanka and Rosé.
Love it.
I mean, honestly, iconic. And then we have Kiala Settle from The Greatest Showman, as in This Is Me, Bearded Lady, as Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, wow.
Noel from Hearsay as King Charles. This is so, like, it's so jokes. I think, like, Six the Musical, but the story of Princess Diana. It's so funny. The soundtrack to it is iconic. We get to sing, like, the most amazing songs, and it's amazing. I'm so excited. So get your tickets now for dianamixtape.co.uk.
I love the sound of that. It sounds so good. Right, okay. Kirsty Scott-Claus, thank you so much for taking time out from your schedule this morning and having a chat with us on Outcast World.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.